You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 29th, 2009, episode 69. Enough Google already. It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about ministry and technology and where those two intersect. And hopefully we'll find something that will make a difference in your church or school. Joining me as usual is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin, and welcome to a different Wells Tech Podcast.
Yeah, we're throwing everybody a curveball today.
That's right. Doing things a little different. I think it's throwing me a curveball, too. My omelet making just wrapped up, and I rushed in here to put on my headphones and record a podcast. So yeah, it should be interesting.
We're doing this on Wednesday, as we reminded our listeners last week. I was in actually your neck of the woods, Sally. Unfortunately, I couldn't get over to Sleepy Eye and see you in person. I was at the campus at Martin Luther College doing some consulting. So I breathed in that beautiful Minnesota air. I feel pretty good.
Yeah, and you took it away with you because today is cloudy and rainy.
Right.
But we did have some nice days while were in this neck of the woods.
I have to give a shout out to one of our listeners who I ate dinner with, a student at Martin Luther College, Dan Albrecht. Enjoyed the meal, Dan, and thanks for listening. Keep doing that and share the word with other folks there. Dan actually works with the network services group there as a student worker, so he's kind of immersed in technology there. Actually, he spent, I think, last summer stringing cable. So that's technology, too. That's got to be done. So he was, I think, working with the door system there. So all those things are necessary. Anybody that's responsible for technology, especially in a school, when we have a lot of those types of listeners, recognize that there's some manual labor involved with technology from time to time, stringing cable and so on and so forth. So, you know, crawling under the desk, whatever it is, that's all part of technology. But today we're talking about software.
That's right, Martin. I'm excited about our show today because we're wrapping up a contest. We've been running Desert Island Software Picks all this month of April, and today we're going to compile all the contest entries and point out a few that were interesting to us, as well as pick a winner who's going to get a fabulous $25 Wells Tech Cafe Press gift certificate. So looking forward to that.
Beautiful. We had a number of entries. So what we've done is kind of picked things that we thought might be of general interest. I think they were all good. In fact, I think everybody got grasped the concept of the contest, which was, you know, what couldn't you live without? What do you use day in and day out? What would you be handicapped without? And obviously, we want to conduct our ministries in the most efficient and effective way. And these tools, I believe, help us do that. So we're just going to tag team it. And Sally, I'll let you lead off with one that you've selected. Tell us what it is and who submitted it, I guess. Is that the approved format for this show?
Well, yeah, we can decide on that now, Martin. Sure, that sounds
right.
Great.
All right.
On the fly. Here's podcasting history being made.
Okay.
You know, what we did was we kind of organized them into different categories because the software kind of spanned different
A lot of categories,
areas of,
yeah.
You know, productivity and things. And this first pick of mine is from the audio-video category, which I guess it shouldn't be surprising to us, was one of the heavier categories as far as different people picking different applications that they use for audio and video production. Obviously, that's an important component of our digital ministry efforts these days. And the one that I picked to talk about was from John Shoesmith. John sent in a link to WavePad Sound Editor. And he said that it enables mixing of numerous sound files and has adequate freeware version, but not great on fading in or out. Mm-hmm. It generates pops, according to John. So I did download a version of it. I went to their website. And I'm trying to remember who the vendor is. It's called NCH Software, and we'll have a link to all of the picks in our show notes. We'll build a special page with all the contest entries so that people can check out these as well. And you can download it for free, so I did that, installed it, played with it a little bit. Seems pretty straightforward. It has a lot of different things, different effects that you can do, supports all kinds of trimming and pop removal, all different sample rates. It also, when I downloaded it, it asked me if I wanted to install additional software from this company. So this isn't the only product they have, and other products are great companions. For instance, the one they recommended was something called Express Burn CD, which allows you from right there in the WavePad sound editor to rip your recording right to a CD, either in audio or in data formats. So, you know, a lot of nice companion things. There were others that were included as well. It is a free download, but then $38 to actually purchase the full version of the software. So you may want to check that out if you're looking for a way to do easy sound editing, WavePad.
So does this compare, how does this compare to Audacity, for instance? You're more familiar with that.
Right. Very basic familiarity with both, but I thought they were pretty comparable products. I thought it was the same kind of product as Audacity, something you could do mixing and you know, some editing to your sound.
Basic stuff. Mostly what you'd use in a podcast or to clean up a sermon or whatever.
Exactly. You know, trimming and things like that. So pretty straightforward, easy to use, so check it out.
Okay. Windows only, I assume?
Actually, there is a Mac version.
Oh, cool.
When I first downloaded it, I had put in my notes that it was Windows only, but then when I went to the site, there is a Mac version as well.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to start out real geeky, and we are going to talk about UltraVNC. This was a submission by Josh Shanick, a frequent contributor to the show, very knowledgeable about technology issues. He's up at Kettle Moraine Lutheran in Jackson, Wisconsin, at our Lutheran High School. And UltraVNC is a free remote desktop sharing, or what some would call PC support tool, and I think that's how Josh would probably use it. He has to maintain a bunch of PCs up there at Kettle. And VNC is just a virtual networking kind of technology that allows you to essentially remote control a machine that you're not sitting in front of. And VNC is has been around for a long time, and there are many, many server and client types of tools. Josh has recommended UltraVNC, and that's one that I've used in the past. I don't use it now. I use a more commercial product called LogMeIn, but same concept, except this is free, and you need a server and a client, or what they call a viewer side to the software. Both are free. You install the server software on the machine that you'd like to control. Very simple setup. And then you install the viewer or the client on the side that you want to, that you'll be working at. And you simply type in the computer name or the IP address, and the two talk to each other, and you basically are operating the system, the remote system, from your local desktop or laptop or whatever you have the viewer installed on. There are all kinds of support tools baked into UltraVNC, like chatting, file transfer kinds of things. You can do Control-Alt-Deletes and visit settings. It does a nice job with video scaling. Sometimes that's an issue with a lot of these tools, that it's sending a lot of information, and screen resolution sometimes bollocks things up. Is that a word, bollocks?
It is now.
Okay,
huh?
Are you familiar with the word bollocks, Sally?
No, I'm going to have to look that one up.
Okay.
I'll have to spell it for me.
I just say it. I don't spell it.
Okay.
But anybody who has to manage multiple computers, this would be a good idea to get comfortable with. Or even if you are the family tech support person, this probably would be something you'd want to investigate.
You know, I'm on track with you there. My dad down in Mississippi needs some support occasionally, and I love being able to log into his computer this way.
Yeah, great, great time saver. And if this is part of your ministry responsibilities, don't neglect to check out these kinds of tools if you haven't already. So thanks, Josh, for sending that in. UltraVNC.
And this is another one of those categories I was actually kind of surprised by, but there were quite a few entrants into the networking category. So obviously a lot of our listeners have to do that kind of support and need a good tool to do it. Another one that was mentioned was Hamachi, and Martin, when I was researching all the links for the show notes page, Hamachi is actually part of LogMeIn now.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which I didn't know about.
I didn't know that either.
So, yeah.
Sounds like something I could do my sushi on, too.
Yeah, your grilling or something. Yeah, exactly. All right.
I have
another one.
Okay.
Sure. I was going to pull one out of the education category, and it came from Ryan Rosenthal, and he just said he couldn't live without his SmartBoard Notebook 10 software. And if we have other SmartBoard listeners out there, I bet you'll agree with Ryan that there is just a wealth of goodies stored up for you in that SmartBoard Notebook 10 software. It actually is free software that you get to install on as many computers as you need it on if you buy a SmartBoard. So there's a caveat there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have your SmartBoard, basically you fill out an online form and you get a product key. And that product key is required to unlock the SmartBoard Notebook 10 software. Once you have that, then you're good to go. It runs across Windows, Mac, and Linux platforms, and just loaded with goodies that you can make use of in every area of teaching to make your lessons more interactive and pulling in the SmartBoard. And just like Ryan said, every time I use it, there's something new there that I can make use of. So if you have a SmartBoard and you aren't using notebook software to its fullest, I'd encourage you to check it out, maybe get in on some training either online or this summer, I think MLC at least is offering some SmartBoard training, and I'm sure there's other training around. And just learn something new about your notebook software, because I bet you're not using it to its fullest.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's amazing stuff. We have a SmartBoard here in the Senate office, and we probably don't use it as much as we should, but that software is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably spend a long time just getting comfortable with it. All right, I am going to go to the dark side for those that are PC fans, and that is a Mac piece of software. Well, actually, I take that back. It is available for Windows users as well. It comes from this kid named Aaron Spriggs.
And who might that be?
That happens to be my teenage, actually, he's almost not a teenager anymore, my 19-year-old son.
And he is a Mac fan, let me tell you. All his picks were Mac.
Big time. Yeah, I know you remarked to me, Sally, you didn't know what half these things were.
Different language.
That's right. Well, yeah, he is a Mac fanboy, as they say. He does work. He does have an excuse. He works for Apple. He goes to school at UWM, but he's also an Apple employee. He works at the Mayfair Apple store. So if anybody ever gets in there, look for the tall, skinny kid who looks a little bit like me. But he recommended Mobile Me. And he couched this when he said he was going to submit this, because I really don't like Mobile Me, although I use it. The reason that I don't like it is when they first rolled it out, when it used to be, what was it, .Mac. They changed it, rebranded it, and did some supposedly good things to it and renamed it Mobile Me. I never got it to work, and I was back and forth with technical support probably 4 months' worth, because I couldn't add a contact. I would add a contact, and then I'd go back the next day, and it disappeared. So I had nobody in my contact list. And the concept behind Mobile Me is it syncs your Mac, and it can do your Windows machine as well, but it syncs all your data. So you've got calendar items, you've got contact items, you have email through your .Mac account, and they all sync up to the cloud in this Mobile Me application, and you can view it. Both it does a backup, and you can view it online in a web browser. There's also what's called an iDesk, where you can store 20 gigabytes of data. So you've got 20 gigabytes of storage that can either be used for backup or for sharing with different people. You can have a public folder. But for the life of me, I couldn't get my calendars to work. And after about 4 or 5 months, they finally got it working. I'm not sure what they did. But in the process, I got an extra year free of Mobile Me. So maybe it was worth it. So I've got Mobile Me, whether I want it or not, till like 2012, something like that.
So you're like the hero of all those Mobile Me users out there. You pushed them till they got it right.
That's right.
Thanks so much.
It's not free. In fact, it's $99 a year. And I would suggest that if you are a Mac user, it's probably more suited for you because it works really seamlessly with the Mac. It does nice backup of your keychain and all those kinds of things. So it's, I think it does what it does well once, you know, they've got all the kinks worked out. If you actually go to Amazon.com, I think you can get a discount for it. You don't have to pay the Apple premium, as it were. I think it's like $79. And I think there are family packs as well. So if you're looking for online storage and you have a Mac, MobileMe might be something that you would want to check out.
And I guess they got it all resolved just in time for the whole iPhone thing to sync with it as well. Is that true?
Yeah, iPhone does work with it.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say they got it all worked out just in time for our contest so we could wholeheartedly recommend it. So
there you
go. I'm sure that was on their radar.
Yeah, that's number one with the Apple
okay.
phones. All right. My kind of fits well with what you were just describing as well, and that is I was going to talk next about Google Reader. We had a lot of entrants in the RSS category, and a lot of them said we need our RSS feed so we can get the Wells Tech podcast. So that's a good reason to to have an RSS reader. This one was actually recommended by Ben Polzine, and just a really great way to pull together your RSS feeds in the cloud. So another, web-based option for that. And I have to admit, I've always been a fan of RSS feeds in my email client.
Mm-hmm.
So for work, we use Outlook,
right.
And I have RSS feeds right there in Outlook. At home, I use Thunderbird, and I have my personal RSS feeds there in Thunderbird. So I never had been a cloud girl in terms of RSS until I got my iPod Touch, and I wanted to be able to get all my favorite RSS feeds on my iPod. And with the RSS reader that I selected for my iPod, it will sync with your Google Reader account. And so there you go. I had to go through the process of setting up a Google Reader account and learning about it. And when I did, I was really glad that my hand was kind of forced and that I went that way, because it is really nice to have those RSS feeds in the cloud, to be able to access them from anywhere, to have them in such a nice format. Google Reader is a great format, puts together all your unread, allows you to scroll through and just very quickly and easily review the new things that have come in from your various RSS feeds. When you sign up for Google Reader, I really like this. They put a link in your reader. The one thing that they do is they put a link to a Common Craft video. And you know I'm a fan of Common Craft videos. And there is a Google Reader in plain English Common Craft video. So I'm going to include a link along with this pick to that video. So if you're brand new to RSS reading, this would be a great place for you to get started. You can watch the video. You can easily sign up for a Google Reader account and start grabbing all that great content from the web and having it delivered to you.
Yeah, Sally, I'm a big fan of Google Reader as well, and I was with you. I live in Outlook, and I thought, boy, I need my feeds within Outlook so I don't have to jump out to another application. And I found that the view I was getting and what I could do with the feeds and how I could sort them was somewhat limited by these mail readers. And Google Reader does such a nice job, like you say, of allowing you to categorize them and view them the way you want and how many you want, and they've got a send feature so that you can easily share those. They have email features, tagging features, starring features, all kinds of stuff. And for those in ministry, don't underestimate the power of your reader. There's just so much information online. If you were a pastor, there's all kinds of blogs and information that you would want to be fed to you through an RSS reader, kind of like your daily ministry magazine. There's all kinds of stuff out there that you could consider. I have a couple of those types of things where I look at blogs that talk about technology and ministry. So I find it an indispensable tool. So if you haven't kind of jumped on the RSS bandwagon and Google Reader, I think that is probably something that you'd probably want to do real soon, because you're missing out on, I think, a lot of good stuff that would enhance your ministry. So.
Yeah, you mentioned the send feed. I think that was the one thing that finally forced my husband's hand as a pastor. Mm-hmm. I was sending him a lot of things that I was reading, and he was like, you know, I think I need to get an RSS reader set up.
And if he's a friend, you can simply share. You don't even have to send. You just click share, and he'll automatically see that in a folder when he opens up Google Reader. So there's some social networking characteristics of it as well.
Good stuff.
So while we're talking Google, why don't I do my Google, which is all of Google. So settle back. No, I'm not going to do all of Google, but we did have a number of people suggesting all kinds of Google tools. So I thought, well, let's just talk Google a little bit. And my daughter was kind of interesting the other day. My oldest daughter, who's graduating from college in just a few weeks, said, yeah, my life is dominated by Google. She uses Gmail. She uses Google Reader. She uses Google Calendar, the weather, all kind of iGoogle. She just found out about, and really, you could live in Google if you wanted to. It could provide your email, your file server, all kinds of things that they come out with. Your videos, Google Maps. The whole gamut of things. So if you're not familiar with some of the other features of Google, it's probably time to get an account, and you don't have to do much to get one. Just get an account and see all the things that you can do with Google other than search. I mentioned Gmail. I mentioned Calendar. We've already talked about Google Reader. There's a little more tab that comes up when you log into your account. And you can see all of the things plus more that come up there. There's Google Photos, Google Sites. You can build a website. You can do blogs, look at books, search for books. There's Google Groups, Google Shopping. We're not going to go into detail on all of those. But if you're looking for a one-stop shop for most of what you do online and even offline, through a technology called Google Gears now, where you can download your email and your documents, it's probably worth a revisit. They have some very smart people there, and they're constantly thinking about how they can provide tools that make sense for their users to use. Now, people get a little nervous when they talk about, you know, giving Google so much information, and it's true. Google knows a lot about you. If you've ever used Gmail, and some of the links, the marketing links that they put at the top are almost eerily close to some of your interests, and that's on purpose, because they actually read your email, or the bot reads your email and says, oh, you were talking about so-and-so. I'm going to show you an article or some ad about that particular topic. So it's a little bit creepy, but I think the value that it provides is we'll supersede that.
Martin, I just was jotting down notes of a couple of things we use in our congregation from Google. And you mentioned Google Calendars and Google Groups. We're making heavy use of those with our church and school.
Right.
And it's just, you know, having Outlook and Exchange Server at work made me understand the power of shared calendaring and things. But without that kind of software set up in our church and school setting, we were able to basically get that for free with Google Calendaring, and it's just been a real breakthrough for us. Another thing that we've used is Forms, which is kind of hidden away in Google Docs. You can very quickly and easily create online forms to gather data and things, and it puts it in a spreadsheet for you, real easy to work
with.
Is
that right? So you send people to the form, so you create a form for VBS registration, for instance.
Right.
So you have people come in, enter their form, and then do you get emailed when somebody submits a registration, for instance?
Yep, you sure can. And you can also, like I said, access the spreadsheet with the data as well. So you can get both ways. And you can embed the form in your own website. Mm-hmm. It's really slick, very, very easy.
How does that compare to like what Final Web has for forms? Is it a little more full-featured than that?
I think
Have you done both?
What I found was I wanted a form embedded on a particular web page instead of on a separate page, which is what
okay.
PinoWeb offers.
So you could wrap it with whatever you want to wrap it with.
Exactly.
Ah,
that
awesome.
Embedding picture is really nice. So I've made use of that before.
So you put it in there with like an iframe, or does it just give you embed code?
It gives you embed code.
Okay.
And you can just, you know, switch to your source code in your WYSIWYG window and paste it in there.
I've got to check that out. That sounds really cool.
Really All easy right. and quick.
Very good. So enough Google.
How can we have enough Google? All right, moving on. I'm going to switch to the social side of things because that's what all the buzz is these days is social and then making that connection between your social networking and your ministry efforts. And I think this entry we got from Nancy Thompson was one that really caught my eye because she said that she's recently found the power of social networking via Facebook. So that was one of her selections was Facebook. And she's doing it on a personal level, but she's also doing it for her church. She's a member of Victory of the Lamb. And I have their Facebook page right here. I'm going to just look. They're in Franklin, Wisconsin, Victory of the Lamb Congregation, Wells Congregation, that actually has a Facebook page. I think we've talked about that before in a couple of other scenarios, but Facebook recently redesigned, and pages act a lot like personal profiles. So when someone writes on the wall, it gets into everyone's Facebook homepage stream and that kind of thing, if they're a fan of the page. And so I think the Victory of the Lamb site is just one that will really get you excited about the potential for using Facebook to do that social networking thing within your congregation or even beyond. And what's neat about pages is that you can make them public. So even if you don't have a Facebook account, make sure you click on the link to the Victory of the Lamb example page because you'll be able to see it whether you have a Facebook account or not. So just a really great tool for pulling together a lot of different resources in the way that you would on a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. She's got video links and photo links and, you know, conversations going on, events that are happening in their congregation and all that pulled together here on their Facebook page. And great example.
Yeah, I think more and more churches ought to be thinking, churches and schools ought to be thinking about where to set up their shingle, as it were. So even if they're tucked away on some country road, they've got an ability to kind of get on a very busy intersection with places like Facebook. So it just doesn't make sense not to have a presence there because some of the people that you hopefully intend to reach are walking up and down that street, if not your own. So it's easy to do, right? It's free. And it takes some strategy. You don't want to just go in and dabble. I think you want to intentionalize its use. We've talked a little bit about this in the past. Don't just do it, but have a reason for doing it and keep it going. Because if you just set that shingle out there and never visit your own location, update information, whatever, why should anybody else?
You know, that's what I was just thinking of. As I was thinking through this, Martin, was last week I think we mentioned you put out a plea on the Wells Tech listserv and to our listeners as well for church technology plans. Mm-hmm. And this is certainly something that needs some thought and should be part of a planned effort at technology in your church and school. And so, you know, you're right about that. Don't just do it willy-nilly, you know. Mm-hmm. Do it right and look at examples, see what they're doing, learn from what other people are doing as well.
Yeah, I only got one response to my request for church technology plans, which makes me a little suspicious that there aren't many out there. There are school technology plans, but I'm thinking churches are not quite to the point where they're thinking along those lines, where we need to intentionalize our use of technology for outreach or for internal ministry even. I think they're just trying stuff without a holistic plan, which is not good. I think churches need to devote some time to this. Obviously, we're biased, but I think there is significant evidence that it would, just like any other ministry, you have to figure out what's the best use of your time and your stewardship dollars too.
Definitely.
All right, I am going to go to, let's return to Ben Polzin. I don't know how we got two of Ben's picks. There was probably some crossover in here, too. And he picked or suggested Evernote. And I believe that has been, I don't know if I've had that as a pick myself in the past or not. But Evernote is basically a note, an information or content gathering tool, a utility knife of sorts that will allow you to capture almost anything you want, whether it be images, web pages, text, files, all into one big streaming basket of information that you can retrieve from almost anywhere. Works cross-platform. There is a free version, and works on Mac, works on Windows, works on your iPhone or iPod Touch, I would think it would work on as well. Works on Windows mobile phones. There's clients all over the place for accessing this information. So if you can't be without certain pieces of information, or if you want to get better organized, it has all kinds of tagging tools. Evernote is worth looking at. Now, there is a pro version as well. Let me pull up the differences here, or premium version, they call it. For free, you have all of the basic features, and you have an upload, a maximum monthly upload allowance of 40 megs. If you go to the premium, which is about $5 a month or $45 a year, you go up to 500 megs. So it depends on how you're using it. There's all kinds of file synchronization tools. Image recognition technology. So, for instance, if you are out and somebody hands you a business card and you just take a picture of it with your iPhone or with your Windows mobile phone, or does iPod Touch have a phone feature or a picture feature?
Camera
feature?
No, it doesn't. I can take screenshots, but not photos.
Oh, okay. All right. It will actually do character recognition and allow you to search on the content of pictures. A wine label or a label in a grocery store, you can use that later for any kind of searching. So very powerful searching tools. And it does text, as I mentioned, it does web clips, audio notes it'll do as well, high-res photos, all those things can all be put into one location, which can then be accessed from wherever you are with whatever technology you're using. There's a web client, so you're never without that information. Some people use it for password storage, those kinds of things. It's similar, I use OneNote. I don't use Evernote at this point. I use OneNote because of all the Microsoft products that we use in the Senate office, and it works very seamlessly with that. The one thing I don't like about OneNote is you can't get at it from wherever you are, like Evernote. And that's why I was initially intrigued with Evernote, is I get to it from my phone or from my home laptop or whatever. So thanks, Ben, for that suggestion. And if you're looking for a tool like that, Evernote is... again, free to try and free to use, depending on your usage. So give it a shot.
You know, I think as we move deeper and deeper into a digital lifestyle, those kind of tools are going to become more and more valuable to us, you know. And we all have different components of our life. We have home and work, and for me, mm-hmm. I have school as well, you know. And pulling all those together seamlessly is just invaluable. It's really, really a great service that they have there.
Mm-hmm. Great.
All right, I'm up with my last pick, and this one I was really excited to try out. I've heard a lot of buzz about it in the social networking community, and it was actually a recommendation from my buddy Jason Schmidt. He's out in Omaha, Nebraska, a teacher there, and he recommended TweetDeck, which is basically a Twitter desktop client kind of application, mm-hmm. that allows you to organize your Twitter feeds in various ways and makes it a lot more user-friendly to work with Twitter. I downloaded it yesterday, so I'm a new TweetDeck user. I have a lot to learn because there's a lot of buttons and things to check out here. But already I'm seeing all the people that I'm connected with through the Wells Tech podcast in one stream, rather than them being mixed in with all of my tweets that I receive across all my different connections and things. So it's really nice to be able to zero in that way. I see my replies, my direct messages, my favorites all on the screen at the same time, which in Twitter you got to kind of dig around and find those things. Mm-hmm. There's easy buttons for retweeting. which, as far as I know, in Twitter, you kind of just have to drag and copy to retweet and put the RT before it. But with this, it just has a button. If you want to retweet something, it does all of that for you. And it also has a checkbox if you want to post your Twitter to your Facebook account as well, so that you can be more selective about what goes to your Facebook account rather than just making it a wide open stream of everything I post on Twitter automatically gets fed to Facebook. You can check it if you want it to go there as well. Their desktop flash-based kind of application platform, so that you know you can run flash type applications on your local computer. So if you don't have Adobe Air yet, that's part of the download of TweetDeck, but once you're all set up with that, you can run other Adobe Air applications as well. And it runs across all the platforms, Windows, Mac, Linux. It does it all. So if you're looking for a personal dashboard, maybe you want to try out TweetDeck along with me. It's still in beta, so maybe there's improvements to come. But so far, it's pretty impressive. Do you use it at all, Martin?
Nope. I use Twirl, which is very similar. And the reason I use Twirl is that it also will allow you to pull in feeds. FriendFeed and Twitter are the two that I basically follow, the microblogging platforms of you know, that are most popular. But I've heard a lot of good things about it. So if you're big into Twitter, and if for listeners, if you have no idea what Sally was talking about with retweets and replies and Twitter in general, we're going to talk about that next week.
Great segue.
We're going to devote a whole show to Twitter and specifically to ministry uses. I think, you know, some of our listeners are probably wondering, yeah, how do I use Twitter in ministry? Is this, you know, it seems very narcissistic. Is this something that could be used in ministry? And I think we'll find that there are some uses. And so you'll have to tune in next week to hear all about that. We'll talk more about some of these clients and tools and what Twitter is and isn't. And just to whet the appetite a little bit. So
another thing you might want to build into that technology plan. So
that's
get ready.
Right. That's right. All right. The last pick then, and it was hard to, I don't know, Sally, I found it hard to pick just the five, you know, that I had to pick of the number of ones that we got, because all of them, I think, have great ministry application. There were things like, you know, Firefox and Firefox extensions and all kinds of other stuff, but you have to kind of pick the ones that probably have the biggest, at least in our opinion, I suppose, bang for the buck. But for everybody, Desert Island Picks are, boy, things that I need to do ministry. And that's great. And that was really the purpose of the contest. And I was also going to comment on the wonderfully varietous ways that these picks came in. Some people sent emails. Some left voicemails. Some tweeted them. All kinds of different ways to get the picks to us, which is kind of cool too. There's all kinds of ways to share information. Mm-hmm. My pick is something that we've talked about in the past, but it's really core to doing any kind of ministry, and that's just general old-fashioned word processing, number crunching, and presentation software, and that's OpenOffice.org. We in the Synod office use the Microsoft suite of products, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Access, those kinds of things. But there's absolutely no reason that somebody couldn't consider using the OpenOffice suite of tools, because it has really evolved into, it's always been good, but I think now the compatibility with the Microsoft products is just amazing. OpenOffice, for those of you that don't know, is essentially a Microsoft Office Suite competitor, but it's open source and free, runs on almost every platform. So it'll run on Windows, it'll run on Mac, it'll run on different flavors of Linux, all with the same interface, the same user interface, and I think with the same efficiency and productivity. They call their things a little bit different. Their Word equivalent is Writer. Their Excel equivalent is Calc. Their PowerPoint equivalent is Impress. They also have a Draw, which actually Microsoft doesn't have included with their suite. And Base is their Access equivalent. The thing that really impresses me about the tool as it stands today is, again, as I mentioned, the compatibility with Word files. Because when you're going to take the dive into something like this and kind of go off the Microsoft reservation, as it were, you have to consider that you're still going to be sent files in those file formats. And I actually had this experience the other day. I have a Mac at home. And I don't have the older Office Suite, the 2004 for Mac, but that version does not read DOCX files, which is the 2007 version of Word. So somebody sent me a DOCX file, which I couldn't open. So rather than downloading a trial version of Word or something like that, I installed OpenOffice.org and wondered, well, maybe Writer in OpenOffice.org could read a DOCX file. And so it does, which was great. I had a free reader, essentially, that could read my DOCX file. I could actually save it back to a DOCX file. So I think the creators of OpenOffice have really done a great job. And best of all, the price tag is absolutely free. And if you are a school or a church that doesn't really need to do the cash outlay for the Microsoft products, and you feel comfortable rolling out some open source software, and we've talked about the pluses and minuses of open source software in the past, OpenOffice.org is definitely something to take a look at, and it obviously doesn't cost you anything to look at it.
Yeah, I didn't know about it, reading the newest Microsoft mm-hmm. format. That's really great to know. I know we just went through a process of writing up some articles for our local newspaper and wanting to email them, and I talked to the principal and said, make sure that, you know, you cross-save them back to the document format, because that's going to be more standard for them to receive it in and everything. So just having that ability to go back to the Microsoft format to communicate with the world makes it a really powerful tool.
It is awesome. So mm-hmm. huge download. I think it's 170 megs or something like that. So if you're on a slower connection, it'll take a while, but I think it's worth the wait. So
probably appropriate that you ended with that one, Martin, because just put a plug in, it was the most popular common pick. I was kind of surprised because the picks were all over the place. I was a little worried when we put the contest out there that we'd get everybody saying OpenOffice and Google and Firefox, you know, and it would be mm-hmm. a lot of crossover. But that really wasn't the case, except for with OpenOffice. There were three people that picked OpenOffice in common, and that was Nicholas Bush, Perry Lund, and Stephen Daly. So thanks, everyone, for your votes of confidence in OpenOffice.
Cool. Very good. So the time has arrived, Sally, where we get to pick our winner. And we'll do this as we've done it in the past. Sally has our contestants numbered, so they all have a number. We will generate a random number at our good friendly website, random.org. So if you're looking for random numbers, random.org is the place to go. Are you ready, Sally?
I am. I'm very excited. You should have your drum roll here.
I forgot.
Not prepared with that one.
Can you give us one?
No, I don't think I'd do very well.
All right.
We'll pretend.
We don't do sound effects.
Nope.
All right, here we go. The number is number 6. Lucky number 6. Who's number 6?
Oh, this is so funny. It's Ryan Rosenthal.
Ah, beautiful. Right.
And I think he might be a 2-time winner on the Wells Tech podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't set up, we don't have any rules, so.
That's right. We're happy that everyone submitted, and congratulations to Ryan, and we'll have you get in touch with us, and we'll send you a link to your $25 Wells Tech store gift certificate.
Yep.
He's going to be loaded with Wells Tech merchandise.
Beautiful.
Lucky fella.
All right. He is.
Yes.
All right. All right. We talked about what's going on next week with our Twitter conversation and how that might be useful in ministry. Let's close the show, Sally, with we've got a new artist. Actually, it's an old group that's actually not even singing together anymore, but their music is still relevant and really, really nice sounds from Corbin Creek. We're going to play their song Empty Grave, obviously a great post-Easter topic from their album Could It Be Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We hope to talk to you next week.
Took your